9/11, there's a very long evidence trail.
Okay.
And any bit of it that you look at, they haven't made the case. And of course, that leads to lots of different theories. Each, you know, there's some people who look at what happened at the Pentagon and they say, well, I don't believe that. And other people look at what happened at the towers and they say, well, I don't believe that. And so actually it's quite difficult to deal with this subject because, you know, you've got a sort of dodgy situation wherever you look, and it's a bit confusing.
Well, give us some tangibles here then. What are those areas that don't add up in layman's terms?
Well, in layman's terms, there's three areas that don't add up. There's what happened at the Pentagon, there's what happened in New York when the Twin Towers collapsed, and then there's the third area, which I'd like to focus on, if I may, I'd like to emphasise at least, which is what was going on in the intelligence world, which allowed, allegedly, 16 people, 18 people, you know, two of whom at least were known terrorists, to operate freely in America, not only to the extent of hijacking planes, but even after the planes were hijacked, we're told that the Pentagon somehow didn't manage to respond effectively. And then, you know, how did that happen? How did they take over the cockpits? But how did they start off? How did this all get going? And then when you look, and this is, I'm afraid, you know, almost too complicated to look at in this sort of program, and it has been neglected, you know, when people talk about 9/11. But to me, the really interesting issues are, how could the CIA have possibly allowed this situation to arise? You know, was it incompetence? Was it bad luck? Or was it, heaven forbid, you know, some sort of an inside job?
Okay, well, let's put Nick Pope onto that, Nick, because you've worked in the sort of similar area, but on the other side of the pond, in the Ministry of Defence, and I know that's not MI6 or MI5, but nonetheless, it's under a similar kind of umbrella. And what Ian says there is absolutely true, isn't it? When you look back at this story and you see what happened, I mean, this is almost schoolboy error after schoolboy error from the intelligence services.
There are certainly some major failings, and I don't think anyone, not even the 9/11 Commission report, doubt that there were huge failings in the intelligence community. And I mean, I know full well that one of the most difficult things in intelligence is the issue of information sharing, because particularly in the classified world, if you have some very highly classified information, the temptation is to sit on it, to do nothing, to not risk compromising it by sharing it. But of course, if you don't then share it with other agencies, it's useless. This is what the intelligence community calls actionable intelligence. And to give a very practical example, I mean, in the UK, there is huge rivalry between MI5, MI6, Special Branch, and the Metropolitan Police. You know, in America, there is huge rivalry and sometimes, you know, almost abject hatred between FBI and CIA. And sometimes, you know, they don't get it right, they don't share information. But of course, that doesn't mean that they're coming together to conspire to murder thousands of their own citizens.
Well, does that make sense to you, Ian, that it's just a case that it's cock-up rather than conspiracy?
No, it's too much to be a cock-up. This wasn't information that the CIA decided, well, you know, we won't pass this on. They were asked by the FBI. According to some accounts, by people who believe the official story, there was nearly a punch-up, and according to one account, there was a punch-up. The FBI was saying, give us this information. We strongly suspect these two known terrorists are in the US. This is 3 weeks before the 9/11 attacks. The CIA just refused to give them that information, because, of course, the FBI were the lead agency in counter-terrorism.
Could there be a reason for that, then?
Because they've got another secret plot going. The CIA, undoubtedly, when we scratch the surface of this, which hasn't yet been done, what we'll find is that the CIA are going to say, it's the only thing they possibly can say, it's the only possible justification for their behaviour, is they had a top secret operation going on which they needed to protect, which is why they wouldn't divulge the information to the FBI.
Okay.
And the question is, what was that top secret operation?
And it's very difficult, Nick Pope, to think that that top secret operation isn't somehow connected to what eventually happened.
Well, I'm not sure I'd agree about that, but just to go to back to one point, I mean, Ian raised the issue of how the cockpits were stormed. From the testimony we have, some of which was from cell phone calls from people actually on the aircraft, the answer to how the the cockpits were actually stormed was that the terrorists started to slit the throats of the stewardesses, and the screams brought the pilots out to try and protect them.
That's pure speculation, Nick.
Well, no, it's not.
Well, yes, those, it is, Nick. You can't make a cell phone call from a plane flying at a high level. Nick. You cannot.
You can.
It's a simple matter of scientific... FBI are now admitting that. The cell phone calls have quietly been... Yes, they've been quietly removed from the official story. If you look at the Moussaoui trial, the FBI's breakdown of the phone calls, it has very, very few cell phone calls.
Family members have recognised the voices of their loved ones, so I dispute
it was probably airphones if they did recognise any voices. B, voice cloning actually is a perfectly viable thing, you know, that happens.
No, there was personal information. You know, these calls...
No, that was when the calls were cut off. That's one of the most suspicious things about
phone
calls.
Let's establish this. Are these phone calls meant to have been from cell phones, or what we call mobile phones, or from the... aeroplane.
Well, that's the point. Initially, they were reported as being mobile calls, cell phone calls, and now I think that may have been because they abruptly used to stop these calls, and so they had the characteristics of mobile phone calls, and that was, of course, cited by Tony Blair as one of the reasons he believed the official story, because they said, well, we've got the witnesses to put the tragic passengers in this case. But actually, it's now been established that you cannot make cell phone calls from a high altitude. Over 8,000 feet.
Yeah, but
they
the,
won't, they
look,
don't get
the,
through.
The aircraft were coming in at like 2,000 and 3,000 feet. You can
one
make
or two,
a call
no,
at that level.
No, they've been traced, Nick. They've looked back at the, according to the official story, and I must emphasise that nothing is really trustworthy in the official story, but if you do accept the official story, most of the time those planes were way over 8,000 feet. At some point they were 40,000 feet.
Okay.
But
some
I,
of
personally
these
I think
calls,
this is a little bit of a diversion
of,
from the CIA
these,
and their role
phone
in
calls.
It. But anyway.
No, this is important. Some of these phone calls were made seconds before the planes actually impacted the buildings.
That was the one that reported there was one cell phone call which could have happened, and that was the one that reported that Flight 93 had been hit by a missile, and that's been excised. You've got to look very hard on the internet to find the reports of that now.
We're going to take a short pause. Our guests are Nick Pope, who is a defence analyst. Would that be right, Nick?
Yes.
Does that sum up pretty much
your background? Yes, 21 years in the MOD.
Indeed. And Ian Henschel, who is an author of 9/11 Revealed, also 9/11 New Evidence. And you would have gathered by now the divide in this argument. If there's something you want to add to it, 08717 223 344. You can email talksport.net or text on 81089. We're back with more from Nick and from Ian right after this.
The Late Show with Ian Collins on Talk Sport.
Okay, we're talking 9/11 and that divided conversation between those that feel that perhaps the events as they were explained to us via our political masters and the news media is not all that it first appears to be. Representing that side, I hope that's a fair description,
yes,
is Ian Henschel, author of 9/11 Revealed. Perhaps on the other side of the fence on this, Nick Pope, defence analyst, who I'm assuming, Nick, from looking at the broad brush of what you've said so far, as we've been told this happened, 16, 19 madmen jumped on aeroplanes, hijacked them, flew them into buildings, end off.
Yes, but it's much more complicated than that. I mean, Al-Qaeda have been described, and this is the quote, sophisticated, patient, disciplined and lethal. They had a huge track record of spending years planning some incredibly sophisticated terrorist attacks, such as the embassy bombs in 1998 in Kenya and Tanzania. Surveillance years ahead of the event. This is a hugely sophisticated operation. I mean, it's bordering on racist to sort of suggest 19, you know, Muslims couldn't do that. That's, you know, it's not 19 Muslims. It's an organisation with millions of dollars of funding, you know, from all sorts of places.
Mm. I mean, does that cut any ice with you, Ian Henschel?
Not at all.
It's a massive military, you know, we've sort of been led to believe that it's a bunch of fellas that jumped out of caves one day and said, let's go smash into some buildings. But, you know, what Nick is saying there is that it was an organised military operation.
No, I mean, the Al-Qaeda never managed anything remotely as complicated as 9/11 before or since. All they've ever managed is to stick a load of explosives on a lorry and drive it somewhere with a suicide bomber. You know, I wouldn't dispute that there are people around who do doing that. For instance, you know, when they tried to attack the USS Cole, before they successfully attacked it, their boat sank because they put too many explosives on. I mean, that's how sophisticated they are.
Yes, but in the USS Cole,
their main ringleader, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, he managed to achieve 9/11, so we're now told. He's not a proper Muslim. You know, he drinks like a fish. He hardly knows the Islamic texts, as referenced by the Sunday Times writer Nick Fielding. He's a womanizer. He was under indictment by the FBI when he was running 9/11, and he's been named by Robert Fisk as an ISI agent, an agent of the Pakistani Secret Service.
Indeed.
That's how sophisticated Al Qaeda are. A lot of people call them Al CIA, duh, you know, because basically Al Qaeda started as a CIA operation in the 1980s. In the 1980s in Afghanistan.
Well, let's give us the other side to all of that.
Yeah, that's not correct. You know. Yes, the West funded the Mujahideen after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1979. They gave them Stinger missiles. Then, when actually the Soviets withdrew in 1988, the CIA realized that they needed to get these Stingers back, and they tried to buy them back for about $1 million a throw. But that's not the same as saying the CIA funded Al-Qaeda. The CIA funded the Mujahideen, but the Mujahideen didn't disband after the Soviets withdrew. They merged with some Egyptian, very Wahhabistic, hardline Islamist terror groups, etc. But you know, just to go back to Ian's point, the embassy bombs in 1998 were hugely sophisticated operations.
What's so sophisticated about sticking a load of explosives on a lorry and driving it into the embassy? They didn't even manage to get through the barriers in one of the embassies.
Well, they killed hundreds and they injured thousands.
Well, that's not sophisticated. That's barbaric, arguably.
It's barbaric.
But that's not sophisticated, isn't it?
The Americans protect their embassies everywhere with rings of steel. You know, there was surveillance going on years ahead of these attacks.
Well, the guy who conducted the surveillance was actually a guy who worked for the Special Forces, the US Special Forces, a guy called Ali Mohammed, which is another very interesting, you know, subplot to this. What was Ali Mohammed doing? Was he the CIA's man in Al-Qaeda? Or was he, as they now say, the Al-Qaeda's man in the CIA? But he was one or the other.
Well, I think in the world of intelligence, one always has agents, double agents, triple agents.
He helped Osama bin Laden, you know, escape from Sudan to Afghanistan. He trained Osama bin Laden's personal bodyguard.
Yeah. The bottom line is this, though. Al-Qaeda have had a successful track record of terrorist attacks.
I don't agree. They haven't even been that successful in recent years,
okay,
if you follow the official story.
The guys
who were going to run this liquid bomb...
Hundreds and they injured thousands.
That was before 9/11.
How much more successful do you want?
Well, I'll tell you that there's been quite a few that aren't successful, according to the official story. I mean, look at this liquid bombs story. I mean, that's preposterous. That some of those guys didn't even have passports, let alone get on a plane to create a bomb.
You know what?
You couldn't have done it.
That's because we're good, and we actually managed to stop most of these plots. But sometimes they get lucky, and it's the old terrorist saying,
but they didn't.
We only get lucky once.
We've only just examined exactly how they did get lucky in 9/11. Was because there was a mysterious stand down of the FBI. They were basically blocked by the CIA. And the really sinister thing is that now in the media they're talking about the FBI being at fault. There's even people saying the FBI is institutionally unable to deal with this. They've been infiltrating the mafia. Mafia used to be called a conspiracy theory until the FBI proved that they exist through long-term infiltration. They're perfectly good at their job. For some reason, they were blocked by the CIA.
Okay, let's take a call here. Our guests are Nick Pope, defense analyst, and author Ian Henschel. We're looking at, two sides of the 9/11 discussion. And it has divided not just a nation, but a world of opinion since it happened, and it continues to do so. Here comes one of the most common questions. You might want to put your headphones on there, yeah. Ian. This comes from Guy in Stoke-on-Trent, and this is one that I think interests pretty much all of us. Guy, good evening.
Yeah, hi, Ian.
Hiya, what's your point?
Yeah, two major questions, not motivation, fact, evidence. Building 7, why did it collapse at 5 p.m. in the afternoon? Excuse me. Not hit by a plane. And the Pentagon, when you look at the photos, where's the debris of the plane?
And where's
why is the hole not big enough?
Where's the hole? Okay, all right.
Luggage and the passengers.
All right, let's put them, first of all, Building 7, Ian Henshaw. I mean, this one has, of course, you know, really inflamed the arguments.
Absolutely.
Well, in that there appears to be no reason why this building fell down.
Well, the official story,
in the manner that it did.
Yeah, I mean, what they're saying is, scientifically, we can show how it collapsed. But I'd like everybody to please remember that this is not, it's not right. It hasn't been shown scientifically, because science is supposed to have its evidence open to everybody to examine, and the evidence for the collapse of the towers has never been properly examined by independent investigators. So, you know, when they say, oh, we've provided an explanation for how this happened, an innocent explanation, it's not true. The computer models have never been revealed that they've used. The evidence is not open to examination by anybody except their own friends. So, you know, the question remains, how did it collapse?
Okay, well.
Recently, traces of nanothermite have been discovered in samples of dust from the World Trade Center. Once again, that looks very much as if there was some sort of explosives involved. The media won't report it. I mean, TalkSport, you know, is the media, but, you know, the normal pro-establishment, pro-government media, they won't even report that traces of explosives have now been found, apparently, in the dust from the World Trade Center.
Let's put that point to Nick Pope. Nick, Building 7, you saw it happen, and it does look, you know, I think from anybody's perspective, a little mysterious. Well, this building comes down, no plane hits it. It doesn't appear to have had any external attack, and yet it comes down like the proverbial
totally symmetrical collapse.
Building 7, of course, was almost literally in the shadow of the Twin Towers. It was hit by debris. It was on fire. There was a fire crew in there trying to put that out, but so many firefighters had died that day that they said, you know what, let's just pull the team out of there and let's save the people, not the building. I mean, this is the interesting thing. Yes, the BBC announced that the building had collapsed before it had actually come down. Mm. But, you know, I've done TV presenting, you've got things going on, you've got a producer talking in your ear. I can tell you one thing. In the intelligence community, if you were really doing a super secret organisation to murder thousands of your own citizens, the last thing on God's earth that you would do is tip off the dear old BBC.
Yeah, would you concede, just on that point, Ian, whatever conspiracy or just general theories apply, the BBC making that announcement as they did, it's online for people to see, wasn't really part of the conspiracy. That was just an awful mistake.
Yeah, I mean, well,
some poor old journo. Because we had calls at the time from people saying, no, this proves the BBC were in on it, because the BBC were told by Tony Blair, who was told by George Bush, who was told by the CIA, and the whole.
Like I say, the last thing you'd ever do is tip off a major news organisation if you were doing something super secret.
How did that building come down, though, Nick Pope?
It was on fire, and they decided they needed to pull the firefighting.
Very neat demolition, though, wasn't it, the way it came down? It came down almost when I see those blocks of flats on housing estates when they're doing away with them, so a bunch of detonators come in and they take it down. It looked just like one of those.
Well, you know, for every structural engineer and architect who says there's something a little bit fishy about this, there are about 100 who say, no, there isn't.
But hang on, though, Nick, you see, because these hundreds who say there isn't, I'm not sure if there are hundreds, most of them are keeping pretty quiet at the moment, but you see, they haven't got access, nobody's being given access to the actual data. Now, for instance, take the World Trade Center collapse, the buildings 1 and 2. The NIST, you know, who are government scientists, they're not independent scientists, they're answerable to George Bush and now Barack Obama in the White House. They're saying, you know, oh, we can prove it. They won't give their computer models to anybody. They say themselves they can't find evidence that there was even any weakening of the steel, let alone melting of the steel. I think the BBC, yes, you know, of course they're in on the conspiracy, but my goodness, the BBC are loyal to the official story. You can find on their website the most abject nonsense. There's a diagram of the World Trade Center, which totally excludes the inner core, which was what held the building up. There's an article saying that, of course, melting, quoting a so-called expert, so this is what, you know, this is what you can make of BBC experts.
Have you contacted the BBC on this?
Of course, they won't even get back to you.
They said your drawings are rubbish.
Yeah, yeah. Not that particular one, but, you know, the BBC, they are so snobby. I was on a picket outside the BBC on asking for the truth to be told. We had a producer come out, he said, you people should be grateful that we've given coverage to your movement. Yeah, coverage. They're calling us Holocaust deniers. They're calling us lunatics. That's great, you know. They think we should be grateful for
can
that.
Can I address Guy's second point?
All we're asking
point.
For is a little okay. bit of due impartiality
can,
from right. BBC.
Can
sorry,
I
sorry,
address
Nick.
Guy's second point?
Guy is still with us. You're still there, Guy.
Yes,
okay.
Okay, here comes the second point, Nick Pope.
On the Pentagon issue, I mean, of course, there are various conspiracy theorists who say, no, it wasn't Flight 77 that hit the Pentagon. It was a missile or it was a hologram.
Didn't look like an aeroplane-sized hole in the side there.
But three points. One, they found the black box there. Two, they found debris from Flight 77 there. And three, rather sadly, and I don't mean this in any disrespectful way, but they literally found the body parts of the stewardesses in the uniforms, that sort of thing. It was not a missile, it was not a hologram, it was not a directed energy weapon. It was exactly what the official story said. Flight 77 hit the Pentagon.
I think you've got a good point there, Nick, but you see, a lot of people are saying that these stories about holograms are disinformation being put out by the Pentagon, who've got a huge, there's loads and loads of people, you know, who now work for the US government who bombard internet bulletin boards and things with fake information and hysterical nonsense. The question about Flight 77 and the Pentagon is, how could Hani Hanjour, totally incompetent pilot, have steered that plane at ground level at top speed 16 foot above the ground and then just by an amazing coincidence hit the only part of the Pentagon that was virtually empty? That's what makes people, the sensible people, suspicious about the Pentagon issue.
Well, there was a C-130 pilot actually up in the air who of course saw the aircraft go in.
Yeah,
so
but how
this
well,
was
he,
witnessed.
That's what he says. There was another plane up in the air which they've only just found out about, which CNN did an article did a feature on, and the Pentagon wouldn't tell them. It's a very sophisticated control plane they would use if there was a nuclear attack, and that was seen, you know, and everybody said, oh, that's just a fantasy, that's a conspiracy theory. CNN, they've got the footage of it. That plane, the Pentagon will not talk about that
okay,
plane.
We're going to take a short pause. We are back with more in a couple of moments. Our guests are Nick Pope, Ian Henshaw. We're debating the issue of 9/11 and the argument that does divide a public. More on that after this.
The Late Show with Ian Collins on Talk Sport.
There's a lot to get through. Big debate here at 9/11. This weekend, of course, commemorates the 8th anniversary of what happened on that day, and yet the arguments and the theories continue, some deeply conspiratorial, some just fundamental questions that many people feel have yet to answer the full, or address the full story of what happened. We have two guests with us on either side of that argument, I think would be reasonable. Ian Henshaw is an author of 9/11 Revealed and 9/11 New Evidence, questioning the official version of events. And Nick Pope is a former defence analyst at the Ministry of Defence, and pretty much believes and accepts the story as we were told, Nick.
Yes, indeed. I mean, you know, I am not saying that there were not mistakes made on that day in the run-up to the tragic events. Yes, there absolutely were. But I do not think this was an inside job, nor do I think that the powers that be turned a blind eye and allowed this to happen.
Okay, let's bring in Scott Forbes here. Scott, good evening, sir.
Hi there.
Hi. Now, you worked at the World Trade Center, and I understand you lost many friends on that day.
Yep, that's right. I worked there from 1998 through till 9/11. Worked for a company that occupied floors 90 and 94 through 97 mm-hmm. of the South Tower. And I still work for the same company, but over here in the UK now.
Okay. How is it that you weren't there on that day?
I had the day off in lieu because I worked the weekend prior to 9/11 on Saturday the 8th and Sunday the 9th.
Sure.
I was given the day off on the Tuesday.
So ordinarily, you would have been working?
I would have been working from 7 a.m. I was a manager of my department, so I would have stayed and no doubt been trapped.
What are your thoughts on the version of events that we hear, as the standard conventional story goes?
I'm afraid it's not complete. I think there are lots of gaps in the information that is being pursued and that is being analysed. I can give you just one piece of information that I'm particularly interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on that weekend on a power-down condition in the South Tower. We were given 3 weeks' notice by the leaseholders, the Port Authority, that there would be no power for a period of 24 to 36 hours. And that meant, as our data center was on the 97th floor, we had to shut down all of our banking systems. Now, that was very unusual. I'd never worked on an incident like that, apart from the 31st December 1999. That was the only other occasion we did it. So to put together a plan to shut down our integrated systems in that manner was quite a big deal. So that weekend, I was in the office on the Saturday, along with many other people from the company, shutting down the systems. The power was off, the systems were down for around 26 hours, I estimate. And then the power up was put on the Sunday afternoon. We were able to power up all of our systems. We had a couple of systems that did not come up until the Monday evening, actually. And this is a piece of information that is not being acknowledged, was not acknowledged by the 9/11 Commission.
You're saying that this was a couple of weeks before, Scott?
No, this was the weekend prior to 9/11.
Okay.
So the Saturday and the Sunday prior to the Tuesday.
All right, and you were deliberately shutting down certain systems at that time?
Well, there was no power. There was going to be no electricity. So because of that, there would have been no security on the doors, no secure cameras. And while I was in the building, me and my colleagues, we saw engineers carrying toolboxes. We were told the power down was for a recabling exercise, and we were told it was only for the top half of the South Tower.
Now, are you saying then, the upshot of this, Scott, is that it just simply raises lots of questions, or that you go as far as to say this was part and parcel of a conspiracy to clearly prepare something for a greater event?
I can't say that. I have no evidence of it being linked to anything. My interest in this is just to get to the truth of the matter. I would like officialdom, I would have liked the 9/11 Commission to simply acknowledge that the power down occurred and to investigate it and give me some information about it.
Okay, well, let me just put this to Nick Pope, because, I mean, Ian, I'm sure this kind of information you are aware of in your investigations, but Nick, that may be new to you, and it does sound certainly significant.
No, I've heard about the power down before. Some conspiracy theorists suggest that all the cameras were switched off so that people could sneak in explosives into the building, that sort of thing. I mean, you know, my fundamental point is, actually, you know, there was no... Even if this had been an inside job, there was no need to do that. I mean, look, two aircraft, commercial aircraft, hit these buildings. Why is anyone surprised that if a commercial aircraft filled with jet aviation fuel hits a building and it catches fire, that building might fall down?
Oh, come on, Nick.
No,
that's absolutely rubbish.
Hang on. Let me make one point on this, which is a scientific point.
Right, then we'll come to Ian to respond.
I'll make a scientific point. One of the points that's often made in the conspiracy theories is that jet fuel, aviation fuel, burns at about 1500 degrees, and this is stuff that you'll find all over the internet, and the forums, the blogs, the email lists, and the conspiracy theorists say this. They say, look, jet fuel burns at 1500 degrees, steel melts at 2750 degrees, therefore this couldn't have caused the collapse. But when you speak to architects and structural engineers, they say, wait a minute, this is completely bogus argument. You don't need the steel to melt. All you need the steel to do is to lose its structural integrity, and then the building can come down.
That would sound reasonable. And I'm going to come back to you in a second, Scott. Do stay there, sir. Ian, do you just want to come back on that?
Oh, well, there's so many things. Pretty much everything Nick said was wrong there.
Surely steel gets weakened, doesn't it?
Yes, it does get weakened. But even that happens at something like 600-700 degrees. The point is that NIST, who investigated this, were not able to produce any samples of any steel that had actually reached anything more than about 250 degrees centigrade. So they couldn't couldn't produce the evidence. That's, you know, Nick uses the word scientific. If you're going to apply a scientific criteria to the investigations, the official investigations, you'd have to say that they're a load of rubbish. They can't produce the evidence. They predicted, sure, you know, they worked out what would have been necessary for the building to collapse, and then they said, well, this is what happened, because of course they only considered one explanation, the official story. And just apropos of that, could I just say that I find it most objectionable, this phrase conspiracy theorist. The wild and crazy conspiracy theory, in my opinion, is the one that's been put out by the CIA. And incidentally, this was put out even before the towers collapsed. They were briefing from the White House that this was Al-Qaeda. This is a conspiracy theory. 18 Muslims organized from a cave in Afghanistan. 19, with one missing. Pulled off, you know, the biggest coup of the 21st century so far. If that's not a conspiracy theory, please tell me what is.
Let me just go back to Scott here. Scott, are you saying, let's go onto this issue of the power coming, the power down that occurred on the weekend before the Tuesday of the 9th of September 2001. Are you saying that on the Monday, for example, I could have walked into the World Trade Center with a bag of bombs and nothing would have filmed me doing it?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that in the weekend prior to 9/11, there was a period when there was no power in a certain part of the towers, which meant that there was no security on doors, that there were no cameras in certain floors, which would have been taking.
So there was never a point I could have got into the building?
My understanding is that no, there was security on the ground floor at that point. I would just add to that that we did see what we thought were contractors up on the 78th floor lobby and above with boxes, like toolboxes and cabling and so on, which we understood that they were just going about their work. But this has never been fully explained. I got in touch with the 9/11 Commission through their website, through like an email system. I wrote to them. I called them. The information was never registered and never explained. I also opened up a Freedom of Information Act inquiry with the Port Authority, and the Port Authority denied that this power down condition occurred. It did. I have witnesses who I work with now. We all saw it, what happened, and it makes us incredibly annoyed, more so actually, that this kind of information is not being acknowledged by the authorities, and actually not being acknowledged and researched by the mainstream media.
And I'm sure a little uncomfortable as well, yeah. Ian Henshaw.
Because, see, I think Scott's evidence is extremely interesting, not because it proves anything about a controlled demolition, but because some people say, and I'm not saying Nick would say this, but one thing you hear all the time from the corporate media is, oh, well, of course, we would have been told about it. If anybody had known, if there was a huge conspiracy, people would have come forward and we'd know about it. Here is a guy who's come forward with some very interesting information. They don't want to know. You know, the New York Times, when they found out that Bush had suddenly started tapping everybody's phone in America in totally against the US Constitution, they sat on the information for a year. Can you imagine how long the New York Times...
Is it pre-Patriot Act, are you saying?
Well, that's an interesting argument, but certainly after 9/11, he illegally ordered the illegal phone tapping of pretty much the whole of America. Some people think it was before 9/11, and they take that as suspicious as well. But the point is that if the New York Times would sit on that story for a year without even publicising it, you know, how long would they sit on the story suggesting that there was a conspiracy to murder 3,000 people? That we wouldn't hear about it for another 50 years if it was up to the New York Times.
Do you think, Nick Pope, there could ever be another interpretation as to why, and I'm not expecting you to speak on behalf of all media, including the New York Times, but could there ever be another interpretation as to why some of these newspapers or organisations are failing to report what appears to be, at the very least, an interesting slice of information that would contribute to the bigger story, that a fellow that worked in the place is fully aware, he's not on the phone here telling us lies, that there was a power down on that day, and yet 9/11 Commission didn't want to know, newspapers didn't want to know, mainstream media didn't want
to know. They didn't want to know about Ali Mohammed either. That was totally blank.
Scott's information is clearly very interesting and important. I think the trouble in the multimedia age that we're in, is information overload. For every genuine person like Scott, there are a zillion nut jobs trying to get in on this. I mean, the 9/11 Commission report interviewed 1,200 witnesses. They looked at 2.5 million documents. It's very difficult to kind of sort the wheat from the chaff in this. I mean, Scott's clearly got some important information, you know, but the fact that there was a power down doesn't mean, I come back to this point, that we conspired to murder thousands of people.
We are just going to take a short pause. We are back with more. Yasa, don't go. We've got another call coming in on this. More emails and texts. Our guests are Ian Henshaw, author of 9/11 Revealed and 9/11 New Evidence, and defence analyst Nick Pope, both on the issue of 9/11, but on very different sides of the discussion. We're back with more on TalkSport on The Late Show after this.
The Late Show with Ian Collins on Talk Sport.
We're on the issue of 9/11 and the debate that has continued over 8 years as to whether, as a people, as a global people, we were told the real truth about what happened that day, or whether there are still questions unanswered. Where undoubtedly there are certainly elements of the story that continue to make for some very interesting discussion, and that's why we have with us in the studio Nick Pope, defence analyst, and clearly somebody who believes pretty much that the story we were told is more or less as it happened. On the other side of that argument, Ian Henshaw, author of 9/11 Revealed. Couple of emails to get through here. John on the Wirral, what about the 700 Israeli workers who never turned up for work that day? Very strange. I always thought that was, I mean, we hear different figures, whether it was 700 or so many thousand, but I've got a feeling that really is a genuine urban myth, isn't it?
It is a complete urban myth. If you go onto the internet, you'll find some people alleging that 4,000 Jewish people received mysterious phone calls saying don't turn up for work this day. Actually, I think I could use this to score cheap points in this debate, and I absolutely will not, and I think that Ian and I are both united on this. This is complete nonsense. Actually, between 10 and 15% of the victims on 9/11, whatever you think about 9/11, were Jewish. This is just a nasty right-wing Nazi conspiracy theory lie.
MB in Truro, if it was an inside job, wouldn't it have been done on a Sunday when the buildings were empty? Or one would assume that that would not be the point of the inside job, I would guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I don't think anybody sensible is alleging that thousands and thousands of people in the CIA and the FBI and the White House and everywhere else all planned to murder 3,000 people. Let's be clear about that. However,
but isn't that the upshot of all of the questions that you put in?
Well, that's the apparent implication. Yeah, and that's why I wanted to say.
Okay.
I'd just like to make it really clear that the allegation, as far as I'm concerned, is that, and I'd also just, by the way, just like to mention that as a coordinator of Reinvestigate 9/11, which is the new campaign for a new proper investigation, independent investigation, you know, I don't have any opinions as to what actually definitely did happen. I think it should be investigated. But the allegation is that some small group of people perverted possibly a CIA operation, and, you know, there might have been very few people who set out to murder 3,000 people. There might have been only literally a small handful. For instance, here's just a theoretical scenario that could conceivably explain what happened. Maybe the CIA had an operation to allow something to go ahead that they knew about, which they thought was going to be a hostage taking, and they thought, great, here's a great opportunity for a fantastic bloodless publicity stunt, a bit like the Entebbe rescue that happened, you know, in Uganda many years ago. It'll raise sympathy for us, it'll raise sympathy for Israel. Israel's under a lot of attack nowadays, and when I say Israel, I mean Israel, and I don't mean Jewish people. Most Jewish people in America don't support Israel at all, let's be clear about that. So, you know, they thought, let's have this geostrategic thing, it'll be very useful, we won't have to kill too many people, probably none at all if we're lucky, let's just let this go ahead. And then somebody else thought, you know, who was possibly monitoring the planes. Do you see what I mean? You can have plots within plots.
Right.
And so you can, the people who actually ended up pressing the button and maybe killed 3,000 people, that could be a very, very small group of rogue operatives, the sort of people who we now know are torturers. We know there's a lot of torturers.
Right,
I mean, if you're prepared to resort to torture as a systematic weapon, what else are you prepared
to
do?
We want to get to some more calls in just a second. Nick, you can come back on that in a moment. But but let me get a Yasser in Leeds. Yasser, hello.
You're right there, Ian.
I'm all right, yeah. What have you got there?
I'd like to expand on a point your guest made earlier.
Yeah.
I actually listened to the interview. It was by a chemistry professor called Niels Harrit from the University of Copenhagen. He actually examined the rubble from the towers, and he concluded that there was no doubt the towers were demolished.
Was this the BBC documentary?
No, this was on Russia Today. I watched his interview.
Oh, right.
And he found that nanothermite was used to melt the beams, and he also concluded that conventional explosives were used in abundance. This is from an examination from of the towers.
Okay, which touches really on what you were saying.
Yeah, could I just take the opportunity, Ian, to put in a little plug? Reinvestigate 9/11 held a meeting in the House of Commons. I think we mentioned it on the show when I was here a few weeks ago. Well, that was very successful. We got a handful of MPs and peers. Okay. Some very eminent peers were interested in this issue. They've got their worries as well with our boys dying in Afghanistan. Who wouldn't? I mean, you know, this isn't just history. This is an ongoing war that we're fighting. Let's remember that. All because of 9/11, allegedly. Well, we've got another meeting on the 2nd of November.
Okay.
And could I just put in a little plug and ask the listeners who are interested to contact their MPs and ask them to please come to this meeting? We had Niels Harrit at the meeting in July, and he's a little bit more cautious than our caller here.
Yeah,
he's saying, well, all I can say as a chemistry professor is that this is very consistent with some sort of explosives being used.
Mm.
I'm highly suspicious of the way these buildings collapsed in a totally symmetrical way very fast.
What do you say, Nick Pope? Then you heard what Yasser just said there, and sort of backed up more or less by what Ian's saying there, from eminent people who work in this area, that something's not right. How would you respond to that?
Well, you know, if I've understood Yasser's point correctly, it was one chemistry professor who may or may not have been quoting Russia Today, did he say? But
did you say he was on Yasser? He was on Russia Today, is that right?
Well, yeah, it was an interview on the news channel.
All right.
Yeah, I think we all know that the Russians are trying to score a few points off the West at the moment. I mean, you know, when I look at this, I am not going to take the word of one chemistry professor and the Russians. You know, to be perfectly honest,
okay,
they're trying to score points off us at the moment.
Hang on, Nick, this guy was in the House of Commons talking to MPs a couple of weeks ago.
One chemistry professor and the Russians. I mean, you know, literally, I think we can do better than that.
All right, well, sadly, gentlemen, and Yasser, thank you for that. Can you believe it? We've been sitting here for an hour, and we have
hardly got anywhere.
Run out of time. Well, I fear we could be sitting here for a year.
Absolutely.
And this debate would continue. I'm sure we're going to come back to this at some point, but in the meantime, Ian Henschel, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Ian.
Your book is out there for those who want to have a look for themselves and see that evidence. 9/11 revealed.
And 9/11 new evidence.
New evidence. And Nick Pope, defence analyst, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
It's The Late Show, Talk Sport.